Hello, I'm Mina, a reader on the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition is for Wednesday, 16th of June, 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity, Beacon Centre. A message to our listeners who receive the Talking News on CD in the post: this remains in paper envelopes, so there's still no need to send anything back to us. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods: calling 01902 213 210, visiting our website www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. And reading this week, we have myself, Rob, writer Graham Fisher, Mina, Ed, Heather, Craig, Helen, Ian, Simon, Christine, Angela, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. We have the quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, a feature on the Magna Carta, the weather, Craig's Black Country joke book, information about vitamins and nutrition, and rounding all that off, we get to hear Graham Fisher's In My Opinion. But first, we start with our Guess the Sound quiz. It's as simple as the title suggests. I'm going to play a sound clip, and all you have to do is simply guess what it is. So, without any further ado, here's this week's clip. Have a ponder on that, and Mina will reveal the answer later alongside the usual quiz answers. Now we start as always with some local news, brought to us by Ian, Angela, Ed, and first up, it's Christine.
Plans for a £4 million refurbishment of Dudley Council House are being progressed despite the scheme previously being blasted as a waste of money. Opposition councillors last year described the plans as a conservative palace to be built in the centre of Dudley, while the council leadership said the work was long overdue. The plans to address long-standing maintenance problems, increase desk capacity and provide an improved working environment at the site were considered by the council in February last year. In a cabinet meeting earlier that month, Labour group leader Councillor Quaidar Zaida accused the leadership of having their priorities wrong and would be creating a plush office while increasing council tax. But council leader Councillor Patrick Harley said the Grade 2 listed building on Priory Road had required substantial improvement works for many years. He added the council would need to budget for unforeseen problems such as asbestos. The plans were not approved at full council and were instead passed to the future council scrutiny committee to seek out a way of making the finances for the project work. A meeting of that committee was held on June the 9th and councillors agreed to note the report and endeavour to identify and make available finances. The proposed £4 million cost of the refurbishment is recommended to be covered by prudential borrowing, but debt and maintenance costs would need to be met from the council's existing law and governance revenue budgets, the report states. Although the committee moved to undertake the project, final approval of the project and associated finances would need to be considered by the Cabinet and approved by full council.
Police have praised residents for following the government's COVID guidelines as the number of fines issued has dropped since restrictions started to ease. Far fewer fines for breaches of COVID-19 related laws have been handed out in the West Midlands and Staffordshire since the government's roadmap out of lockdown got underway, In total, nearly 6,000 fines have been issued for breaches of COVID-19 laws in the West Midlands and Staffordshire since March last year. Figures published by the National Police Chiefs Council revealed a total of 3,829 fixed penalty notices were issued by West Midlands Police between March the 27th last year and May the 16th this year. They include 126 fines handed out after April the 18th when restrictions eased in England, 168 fewer than the 294 processed in the previous 5 weeks. The latest figures cover the easing of restrictions on April the 12th, which saw the return of outdoor hospitality, non-essential retail and gyms, as well as the rule of six outdoors. However, they do not cover the May the 17th opening, which saw different households allowed to mix indoors for the first time in months. Across England and Wales, 120,519 fines were issued by the 43 territorial police forces, British Transport Police and Ministry of Defence, for alleged breaches of COVID-19 related laws. Of those, 5,117 were handed out in the 4 weeks to May the 16th, down from 16,699 the month before. The West Midlands Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Foster said, "Throughout the pandemic, the vast majority of people in the West Midlands have followed the rules and helped to keep their communities safe. There have been some who have flouted the rules, and officers have followed the 4E approach to engage, explain, encourage, and as a last resort, enforce. As the weather gets better and restrictions continue to be eased, whilst it is important to see our friends and family and support the local economy, people should exercise caution and follow the rules that are in place to help keep infections down."
A council in the Black Country has managed to balance its books despite the impact of coronavirus on its services, chiefs have revealed. Wolverhampton Council held back on projects and kept vacancies unfilled to ensure it came around 0.26% under its target budget. But the council is still forecasting a deficit of almost £30 million by 2023-24, despite the slight underspend for the 2020-21 period. It comes as Wolverhampton Council's leader Ian Brookfield called on the government to act now and guarantee sustainable funding. Councillor Brookfield said, "COVID massively distorted our budget last year. It meant that certain council services were unable to operate as normal, and therefore departments spent less than they ordinarily would because it was all hands to the pump dealing with the pandemic emergency. This, combined with our planned and prudent financial management, led to a small underspend, which will be used to ease future pressures, because it is vital to remember we continue to forecast a deficit of almost £30 million by 2023-24. This council has been forced to make cuts of £235 million due to reductions in government funding over the past 10 years, and we have absolutely no certainty over how government intends to fund local councils in the future. Based on the very limited information provided by the government, we continue to be prudent with our finances and we are planning for the continuing austerity ahead until we hear any different." Councillor Brookfield said they literally have no clue about what the funding will be beyond the money they've received from this year, as he called on ministers to help the city bounce back from the impact of the virus. He added, "I continue to urge the government to give us the tools we need to do the job so we can deliver our ambitious long-term plans for our city and help our communities and businesses to relight from the shadow of COVID."
West Midlands Mayor Andy Street claimed more than £31,000 in expenses for his first term in office, with taxi and train costs coming top. The Conservative Mayor's Office has said his accounts are the definition of value for money and have pointed to investment the Mayor has attracted for the region. The cost of expenses spread over the first four-year term equaled more than £7,700 per year, much lower than the average amount claimed by Members of Parliament on expenses and allowances at £157,747 per MP. Of the total for Mr. Street, more than £8,800 was spent on taxes for the 4 years, while more than £8,400 was spent on trains, more than £8,000 for flights, and £4,100 on hotels. The mayor claimed for flights 8 times, with destinations including Toronto, Helsinki, France and India, but not once for air travel in the last 2 years. Mr. Street's gifts totalled more than £16,300 for the same period, with the biggest single item consisting of travel to the Bloomberg New York Mayor's Programme in July 2018 at a cost of £5,525.71. He was also gifted a hotel stay worth £810.38 for the same event. A spokesman for the mayor said, during his first 4-year term, the mayor brought in more than £3.5 billion of new investment, built a record number of homes on brownfield land, oversaw huge investment in outdated transport infrastructure, and began closing the skills gap to give people access to better jobs. He achieved all of this whilst keeping expenses low and not charging residents a new levy on their council tax. That is the definition of value for money, and he will continue to stick with his low-cost approach.
More than 1.7 million patients across the region could be affected by controversial plans to share GP surgery data. Information on patients' treatments, referrals and appointments over the past 10 years will be extracted from GP surgeries by an NHS system unless people opt out before September. The programme, GP Data for Planning and Research, was due to start in July but has been pushed back to September amid concerns around privacy. And the latest figures show the plan could affect more than 1.7 million patients across the Black Country in Staffordshire. They will now have until the 31st of August to opt out of sharing their personal information. The programme would put the medical histories of 61 million patients across England into a new database. The launch was delayed until the 1st of September following complaints from privacy campaigners and doctors that people did not have enough time to understand what was happening. Information will be accessed by organisations which will legitimately use the data for healthcare planning and research purposes, and all requests will be subject to independent oversight and scrutiny, NHS Digital said. It's added that patients can opt out of sharing their data at any time, though any opt-out will not be applied retrospectively. Anyone wishing to opt out of GPDPR entirely should therefore do so before the 1st of September.
3 more local news bulletins coming up, but now it's time for our weekly update from Beacon.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from the Beacon Centre with your latest update of everything that's been going on at the charity. First up this week, we kick off with some exciting news. So, we're all wanting to make the most of summer 2021, right? Well, now thanks to Beacon, you can kick it off in style if you're a winner in our raffle. There's a host of prizes to make sure that your summer goes with a bang. And by entering, you'll be helping us to support someone with sight loss as well. The first prize is family tickets to not one, but 2 popular attractions, Skirmish Paintball Wolverhampton and a boat trip with our friends at Dudley Canal Trust. After your fun-filled days, you can unwind with the ultimate schmores hamper as well, from Tesco Express Hurst Hill. The second prize is a family pass to Mini Pro Golf Park in Kidderminster, a gift voucher for Flip Out Samwell, a £15 voucher for Beacon's Fab Lab, and a Sainsbury's sweet hamper. The third prize is a bespoke flower arrangement from the Fab Florist Nightingale worth £40. What incredible prizes we've got, and they've all been kindly donated. We'd like to say a big thank you to all the organisations involved who supported us. So, what are you waiting for? Get your ticket in one of our shops or online via www.justgiving.com/fundraising/Beacon Summer Raffle 2021. That's www.justgiving.com/fundraising/Beacon Summer Raffle 2021. Terms and conditions apply. See our Just Giving page for more information. Now, in other exciting news, we are delighted to let you know that our amazing Fab Lab products are now available via Etsy, just in time for Father's Day. We've got a range of gifts that are perfect for your dad. And what's more, every purchase helps us make sure someone with sight loss isn't left feeling alone. Shop now, www.etsy.com/UK/shop/made-by-fablab. That's www.etsy.com/UK/shop/made-by-fablab. Now, as some of you will know, our expert advisors can help with all aspects of sight loss. So we've asked them to share a free top tip each and every week. This week, we've been demonstrating how you can keep track of the colour of your clothes in your wardrobe with something as simple as a safety pin. Yeah, that's right, a safety pin. All you need to do is put one pin on your black clothes, two on your blue, three on your green, and so on. I guess depending on how brightly you like to dress. If you need help with sight loss, call 01902 880 111 and ask for one of our sight loss advisors. Lastly this week, can you help improve our website? We want to make sure it's as accessible as possible and contains all the information you might need to know about Beacon or sight loss, but we need you to tell us what you think we can do better. We've compiled a short survey, and if you'd like to have your say, please get in touch via 01902 880 111 and ask for me, Helen Brown, or you can email me on hbrown@beaconvision.org. That's hbrown@beaconvision.org, and I can email a copy out to you. It takes just a few minutes to complete, and we would so appreciate your support. That's it for this week. Hopefully, I'll catch up with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for that, Helen. Now we have some more local news, brought to us by Ian, Ed, Christine, and starting us off this time, it's Angela.
About 240 workers at Dudley's Hospital Trust have opted out of having the COVID vaccine. At the Dudley Group NHS Foundation Trust, 4.86% of workers have been recorded as refusing the vaccine. Diane Wake, Chief Executive, the Dudley Group NHS Foundation Trust, said they encourage staff to protect themselves, but vaccination is an individual choice. She said, "Vaccines are extremely important in the fight against COVID-19, and we encourage all our staff to protect themselves. We have shared the benefits of vaccination through all our usual methods of staff communication, supported by one-to-one discussions with managers and webinars for BAME colleagues so they can discuss any individual concerns that they may have. However, we recognise that having the COVID vaccination is still an individual choice."
More than 100,000 residents in Wolverhampton now have maximum protection against COVID-19 after receiving both doses of the vaccine. Latest figures show a total of 254,409 vaccinations have now been administered in Wolverhampton, with 148,301 residents receiving their first dose and 106,108 having had both. Anyone who is aged 25 plus or who will turn 25 before July 1st can book their vaccination at nhs.uk/COVID vaccine. The vaccine is also available to the clinically extremely vulnerable, people with a learning disability, frontline health and social care workers, and people in receipt of carer's allowance or who are the main carer of an elderly or disabled person. Councillor Jasbir Jaspal, Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet Member for Public Health and Wellbeing, said, "The vaccine is the best protection we have against COVID-19. It significantly reduces your risk of getting seriously ill or dying from COVID-19 and of catching and spreading COVID-19 to others. It's brilliant news that over 100,000 residents now have maximum protection from COVID-19 after receiving both doses of the vaccine, and that another 148,000 have at least some protection following their first jab. If you're aged 25 or over, or are otherwise eligible, please book your jab as soon as possible. And if you've already had your first jab, make sure you go and get your second as soon as it is due."
More than 20,000 fewer workers in the Black Country in Staffordshire were on furlough in April as coronavirus restrictions started easing across the UK. Many pub, restaurants and shop workers returned to their roles that month as outdoor hospitality and non-essential retail opened for the first time since December. However, with restrictions still in place, businesses in other sectors continued to be hit hard by the effects of the coronavirus pandemic. HM Revenue and Customs figures show that 94,300 jobs held by workers living across the region were furloughed in April. That was 22,900 fewer than the 117,200 furloughed at the end of March. Through the scheme, the government pays 80% of a worker's wages, up to £2,500 per month, if they haven't been able to work due to the impact of the pandemic. However, employers will pay a larger contribution from July. Andy Street, the Mayor of the West Midlands, said he will continue work to create new jobs to avoid unnecessary unemployment. He said, after enjoying a record number of people in work before the pandemic struck, COVID has knocked us for six. We estimate that there are 100,000 people now across the West Midlands who have fallen out of work, and this number could become a lot worse with tens of thousands still on furlough. It is therefore absolutely critical we avoid that happening and work with employers and the government to help bring people back off furlough. That is what my 100,000 jobs plan commits to, and the furlough figures released for the Black Country today suggest that's what is happening.
Wolves fans have thrown their support behind new boss Bruno Lage and told of their hopes of seeing more attacking football when they return to Molineux. The former Benfica manager takes over from fellow Portuguese Nuno Espírito Santo at Wolves as they look to get back to do their best following a disappointing last season. There were plenty of supporters at the club's megastore who said they were optimistic for the future. Kyle Hodgson, 25, from Parkfields, said, "I'm pleased to see him come in and take over as he's much more attacking-minded, and I think that's what we need at the club. He's got to be allowed to do his own thing and not be compared to Nuno, so we need to give him the time to get it right, as do the players and the club. I know the players who have been managed by him describe him as a great coach and disciplined, which is something we need at the club, so I think the future is looking bright." Cully Bambra has been a season ticket holder for nearly 40 years, and the 53-year-old from Bedworth said he hoped Bruno's previous successes would help him at Wolves. He said, "He was successful at Benfica, and I think the formula he has to work with is a really good one, although we were a bit stale last season. I hope he can bring something new to the table, and I am looking forward to a more attacking style from the players next season." And Stephen Handzaker from Coven has been a supporter for 40 years, and the 55-year-old said he hoped the new man would bring a new style to the club. He said, "I was sad to see Nuno go, but I know our new manager has got experience and an attacking style, so we'll have to see what happens next year. I hope he gets a chance to show what he can do, and that he brings the younger players through and gives them a chance. I do see this being a steady progression from where we were a few years ago, so my message to Bruno would be to give us some attacking football and more goals."
A machine used to increase oxygen levels in pools within a Black Country park has been moved after a goose's leg was injured by the device. Wolverhampton Council has moved one of the aerators in the city's West Park after cygnets and geese were reportedly injured. The aerators, which recirculate the water to increase oxygen levels and help keep fish healthy, had been placed near nests in the park's smaller lake before being moved. One regular park user, who asked to remain anonymous, said she found a goose with one leg and took it to the vets where it had to be put to sleep. She said, "There's normally two aerators in the large lake and usually they put the two together. They're put in there for the fish. When the water is too hot, they can't breathe. I saw them placed in the small lake and they were very close to the nesting area of geese, cygnets and moorhens. The young don't understand what it is and they get sucked in. It's sad. It's a ridiculous place to put it. We're getting injured ducks and all sorts." A spokesman for Wolverhampton Council said, "This type of aerator has been used in West Park for approximately 4 years or more without incident. It's one of the most environmentally friendly and gently sits on the water, pushing the flow away from the device rather than drawing or dragging anything in. As a matter of precaution, we have removed the aerator from the smaller lake and repositioned it in the larger lake."
Now it's time for us to head over to Mina, who asks us, as always, some more tricky questions to ponder.
Hello, and welcome to the Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. How do they keep track of the Queen's outfits? Question 2. What names were given to man engagement rings? Question 3. Why are wedding rings worn on the fourth finger? Question 4. How much water does our body lose during a flight? Question 5. What gift did the kings of Siam give as punishment? And question 6. How many accompany the Queen on her travels? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show, but for now, good luck!
Thanks for those tricky questions, Mina. Now we have some more local news, brought to us by Christine, Angela, Ed, and first up this time, it's Ian.
Facilities for pharmacy students at the University of Wolverhampton will undergo a £3 million refurbishment over the summer, Cheeves have said. Education bosses say the move will see the existing practice suite extended to give pharmacy students a flexible working space at its city campus. A study area will be built for postgraduate students, along with two new meeting rooms, a new reception area, and a multi-purpose teaching space. Dr. Colin Brown, head of the School of Pharmacy at the university, said, "This exciting refurbishment has been designed to bring all elements of our successful pharmacy course offering together in one place in the heart of the city of Wolverhampton. All services, including the extended teaching facilities, meeting rooms, and a new reception area, will bring staff and students together in one space, offering a complete single pharmacy footprint at the university. Applications for pharmacy courses are on the rise, and this investment will most certainly move the university's plans forward for continuing to develop our offer. The refurbishment project is taking place over the summer, with work expected to be ready for the start of the new academic year in September this year, after the contract was handed to Wilmot Dixon Interiors to carry out the work in the Wolfruna building."
Newly planted trees have been snapped in half in a spate of wanton vandalism across the Dudley Borough, chiefs have said. Trees planted along both sides of the path in Grange Park have been almost completely destroyed as vandals snapped the trunks. Three trees along Stallings Lane, Kings Winford, have been targeted, with branches also being snapped off a number of other trees. It has led to council chiefs in the borough calling on anyone with information to come forward following the attacks earlier this month. Councillor Karen Shakespeare, Cabinet Member for Public Realm, said, "These trees have been planted using taxpayers' money to try and make the borough a more attractive place for us all to live in. It just beggars belief as to why anyone would want to do such a thing. It is wanton vandalism and a criminal offence, and councillors on both sides of the political spectrum are determined to catch the people responsible. I would urge anyone with information on either case to contact the council or the police. Council tree experts have performed remedial works on the trees affected, but they are now unlikely to reach their full growth and potential due to the vandal attacks. Both incidents have happened this month and police have been informed, but the perpetrators are yet to be identified. Anyone with information can call the police on 101 or Dudley Council Plus on 0300 555 2345.
A popular city centre venue that has hosted bands including the Arctic Monkeys and Coldplay is set to go under the hammer next month. The Little Civic in Wolverhampton has been put up for sale after the building's owner moved out of the city to pursue other business interests. The North Street venue, which was formerly run by Wolverhampton Council, was a top indie club for years and hosted hundreds of bands. It is currently run as Blossoms under tenancy. Sean Westwood, who took over as landlord of the venue around 5 years ago, said there had already been plenty of interest. "I've moved out of the area now, and it's time to sell the little Civic, said the 28-year-old, who is starting a new nightclub in Bristol later this year. I leave a lot of good memories there. It's been a great indie club in the city where plenty of bands have played over the years. It will be sad to see it go, but it is time to move on. The venue was formerly the Town Hall Tavern, closed in 2009, with the Little Civic moving to the Slade Rooms on Broad Street the following year. It has operated under several names since, including Loose Lucy's and Numa Bar. It was taken over by the City Council in 1999 and hosted Coldplay in that year, followed by the Kaiser Chiefs in 2004, Arctic Monkeys played there in 2005, before selling out of the Civic Hall the following year. It is due to go up for auction with Bond Wolf on the 21st of July. Mr. Westwood also sold the Dog and Doublet late last year.
Residents in Dudley have been enjoying hundreds of cycle rides per week since a new cycle hire scheme launched in the borough. The West Midlands Cycle Hire Scheme rolled out in Stourbridge and Kings Winford in April, with people invited to enjoy their first 30-minute bike ride for free. Since the scheme launched, it has generated between 100 and 320 rides per week. Bike stands were installed in and around Stourbridge town centre as part of the scheme, which is now up and running in many other areas of the region. Grey and green bikes are available with docking stations at key sites, including Stourbridge bus station, near the bonded warehouse and in the town centre, as well as out towards Wordsley and Kings Winford. The bikes can be hired using the Beryl Cycle Hire app, which will include COVID safety advice. To receive the free 30-minute offer, people need to download the app and register their details. Councillor Karen Shakespeare, Dudley Council's Cabinet Member for Public Realm, said, "We are really pleased that the bikes have been well received so far, and we expect them to grow in popularity in the coming weeks, particularly as the weather improves. They're a great green way to travel to explore the local area and stay active." Andy Street, the Mayor of the West Midlands, added, "I had great fun taking a Stourbridge Cycle hire bike for a pleasant ride alongside the canal recently and would strongly urge others to give it a go. It has been so successful that more bikes and docks are on the way, and we are talking with our partners, including Dudley Council, about new dock locations in Stourbridge."
A pharmacy in Wolverhampton has been sold, having been put up for almost £1 million. The price paid for Tettenhall Wood Pharmacy in School Road has not been disclosed, but it was bought leasehold off an asking price of £925,000. It was bought through specialist business property advisor Christian Coe, and funding for the sale was sourced through a commercial finance specialist, Christie Finance. Tettenhall Wood Pharmacy dispenses in the region of 9,500 items per month and is in a mixed-use retail parade. First-time buyer Vinayak Kahana said, "I am delighted to have finalised the purchase of Tettenhall Wood Pharmacy. As this is my first pharmacy, this is an exciting new venture for me to be embarking upon. I have many plans to grow and expand an already successful business." Gary Boyce, director at Christie Finance, who sourced funding for the buyer, added, "As an experienced pharmacist, Vinayak was determined to acquire his own pharmacy, and we were able to assist him by securing the necessary funding to make his dreams become a reality. We wish him our very best and hope to be able to support him further in the future."
Now we have a message from the Black Country Living Museum, whose specialist access tours are now back. Each month they'll be hosting both an audio descriptive and a British Sign Language interpreted tour, information of which will be available on their website. This month, on Father's Day weekend, the museum is celebrating the history of transport in the Black Country for their transport weekend. Visitors on specialist access tours on Saturday 19th of June can also enjoy a guided tour of their vehicle collection. Places on the tour can be booked either via their website or with their sales and ticketing team on 0121 520 8054, with lines open between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Monday to Friday. Now we hear from our sight loss advisor Mina, who asks for some information on vitamins and nutrition.
Hello, my name is Mina. I'm a sight loss advisor for Beacon Vision Charity, supporting people with sight loss. Today I'll be talking about nutrition and vitamins and the importance of vitamins in your diet. What are vitamins then? There are two types of vitamins, fat-soluble and water-soluble. Fat-soluble vitamins are mainly found in fatty foods such as animal fats, including butter and lard, vegetable oils, dairy foods, liver and oily fish. You do not need to eat foods containing them every day. This is because your body stores these vitamins in your liver and fatty tissues for future use. These stores can build up so they are there when you need them. However, if you have much more than you need, fat-soluble vitamins can be harmful. Fat-soluble vitamins are vitamin A, vitamin D, vitamin E and vitamin K. We can get vitamin A from cheese, eggs, oily fish and yogurts. Vitamin D can be found in salmon, liver, egg yolks and cereal. Vitamin E can be found in sunflower oil, almonds and spinach. We can get vitamin K from green leafy veg and cabbage. Water-soluble vitamins. These are not stored in the body, so you need to have them more frequently. If you have more than your body needs, then your body gets rid of extra vitamins when you urinate, so water-soluble vitamins are generally not harmful. However, this does not mean that all large amounts are necessarily harmless. Water-soluble vitamins are found in fruit, vegetables and grains. Unlike fat-soluble vitamins, they can be destroyed by heat or being exposed to the air. They can also be lost in water used for cooking. This means that by cooking foods, especially boiling them, we lose many of the vitamins. The best way to keep the water-soluble vitamins is to steam, grill or bake foods rather than boiling them. Water-soluble vitamins are vitamin C, vitamin B and folic acid. Vitamin C can be found in oranges, peppers, strawberry and potato. Vitamin D can be found in meat, seafood and breakfast cereal. Folic acid you can get from broccoli, kale, sprouts, liver and chickpeas.
Thanks for that useful information, Mina. Now we have our final block of local news. And starting first, it's Angela.
Flowers have been planted along Briley Hills High Street to help spruce up the area and make it blooming great. Horticultural students from Dudley College joined pupils from Briley Hill Primary School for the event. It saw Briley Hill Community Forum, Cluster Connect, Briley Hill Market and Top Church Training also turn out. They all came together as part of the Briley Hill in Bloom project with the aim of helping to improve the area. Councillor Simon Phipps, Cabinet Member for Regeneration and Enterprise, said after a really difficult 12 months for residents and businesses, it's fantastic to see Briley Hill lively with activity again. People from all across the community have come together to organise this event, which shows there's real pride in the local area. Briley Hill in Bloom is sponsored by Dudley College, with the plants being maintained throughout the summer by volunteers from Briley Hill Musical Theatre Company, St Michael's Bell Ringers, Briley Hill Civic Hall, Dudley Council for Voluntary Service and Briley Hill Market. Shane Birch Bastock, Briley Hill in Bloom organiser and member of the Briley Hill Community Forum, said it was very rewarding to see lots of people out enjoying the activities, and we hope to plan many more events throughout the year with support from our partners and volunteers. The Mayor of Dudley, Councillor Anne Millward, was special guest of honour at the event.
A free event for the family to mark National Armed Forces Day celebrations will take place in Wolverhampton at the end of the month. Armed Forces Day, which takes place on Saturday the 26th of June, is a chance for people to show their support for the entire Armed Forces community. The countdown to Wolverhampton celebrations will begin with a flag-raising ceremony at 11 a.m. on Monday, June the 21st, outside the Civic Centre. On Armed Forces Day itself, an event will be held at West Park between 12 p.m. and 4:30 p.m. Due to COVID restrictions, people must pre-book their free tickets for the event in order to control the numbers in attendance. There will be live music from Chris Westwood, the Bluebird Bells, and Helix Acoustic, and a military drill and inspection in the event arena at 1 p.m. The family event, hosted by local radio presenter Dickie Dodd, will also feature a fun fair, street food traders, bars, face painting, an appearance from Wolves FC mascot Wolfie, climbing wall, and an escape room. The finale of the event will be a skydiving display from the Wings Parachute Display Team at 4:30 p.m., weather permitting. with four parachutists jumping from a helicopter and landing in the event arena. Wolverhampton's mayor, Councillor Greg Brackenridge, said, "As a city, we have a special relationship with our armed forces. Armed Forces Day is an opportunity to celebrate all that the forces do to defend the nation at home and abroad. And as an ex-serviceman myself, this is something that is close to my heart. We have a fantastic event planned to mark Armed Forces Day. I would love to see as many people as possible come along and have a great time with their families while showing their support for the forces and thanking them for all they do for our city and country."
Fencing has been put up around a replica anchor from the Titanic in Netherton as restoration work continues. The fencing has been put up around the Titanic replica anchor to help protect the life-size 15¾-ton anchor, the original of which was originally made in the town. The anchor is an exact replica of the one used on the ship and has been part of the community in Netherton since it was introduced in 2010. In 1911, Noah Hingley's of Netherton made the anchor for the ill-fated Titanic, which sank on its maiden voyage in April 1912, with the loss of more than 1,500 lives. It is currently having work done on it to paint it and secure parts of the anchor which may have eroded over the last 11 years due to exposure to the weather. The fencing will ensure the work can be done on the anchor without any disturbance and will ensure the restoration team can work safely.
Staff at a family farming business at Essington are now serving up something good for visitors in the form of their award-winning afternoon teas. Farmer Richard Simkin, aged 70, a director of Essington Farm, which has polytunnels, garden plants, a farm shop and pick your own, as well as an award-winning butcher, has finally been able to reopen the tea room and catering it provides. Richard said, "We built the patio area 2 years ago, but last year we never even got to put a deck chair on it because of the pandemic. Now we have reopened our tea room tentatively and people can now book afternoon teas. These do have to be pre-booked, but we are also serving breakfasts and tea and coffee if spaces are available. I think that with our inside space, the marquee and outside area, that we can cater for about 80 people and still be COVID compliant. We hope that we can soon also start serving a lunch menu when COVID-19 restrictions allow, and we feel it is safe to do so. Recently, we have found we have had lots of visitors wanting our garden baskets filled with plants in the colours of local football clubs. People just want to get outdoors and enjoy everything it has to offer, and now they can also enjoy the taste of a typical English afternoon tea."
A party will be held at Himley Park next month to celebrate the Black Country Festival. After an enforced break of a year due to the coronavirus pandemic, the Black Country Music On Festival will return to the park on Sunday, July the 11th. And the event will have a special meaning this year, featuring the presentation of the Freedom of the Borough to the frontline heroes who risked their lives to save others during the pandemic. The festival will feature live music and comedy, a fun fair, stalls and a sandpit, plus much more. Running from 12 p.m. till 7 p.m. in the grounds of the Stately Home, tribute acts to the likes of Adele, UB40, The Killers, Bruno Mars and ABBA will take to the main stage alongside local up-and-coming bands. The comedy tent will showcase black country comics, including husband and wife duo Dandy, Emma Rollison as Dolly Allen and Sean Percival. Councillor Anne Millward, the Mayor of Dudley, said the Black Country Music On Festival promises to be a fantastic, fun-filled event for the whole family in the sunshine, with music, comedy and all sorts to do for the youngsters. "It has a special meaning this year, giving us the chance to say thank you to all those people who work so tirelessly, risking their lives on the front line to protect us all during the pandemic. We would urge Black Country folk from the borough and beyond to turn out and support it. Come along and enjoy a great day out celebrating who we are and where we're from, as well as hopefully the start of a brighter future as we start to emerge from the pandemic."
It's time once again to hear from Flashback Roger, who asked for us some more amazing facts.
Flashback. Hi everybody, it's Roger again with this week's serving of facts and trivia. I hope that the items I discover are enjoyable for you and that you can pass on these quips to your friends. So here we go. Did you know that Queen Elizabeth II, our lovely Queen, God bless her, keeps track of when she wore each outfit? It's rumoured that Queen Elizabeth never wears the same hat twice. If she does, she waits years to wear one again. And evidently, there's a spreadsheet recording her exact outfit every day. So what does she do with all those hats? Well, they go off to be stored properly after being inspected by the royal milliner for any damage and any necessary repair ready for next time. And did you know that there were once male engagement rings? Well, in 1926, jewellers paired with advertisers to sell the concept of the man engagement ring. The male engagement rings when they had names like the pilot, the stag and the master. But that went down well. And while we're on the subject of marriage, do you know the reason why the fourth finger is the wedding ring finger of choice? No? Neither did I. Well, there's a touching explanation. Because in ancient times, it was thought that there was a vein in your finger on your left hand that ran straight to the heart. And the heart, of course, was thought to be the centre of our emotions. So ancient Romans called this vein the vena amoris, which is Latin for the vein of love. And did you know that your body loses up to 8% of water in a flight? Water is our body's oil. Without it, it can't function. You lose about 8% of your body's water while on a flight. And this is because the humidity in the climate-controlled environment can be as low as 10 to 15%. And legend has it that the kings of Siam, now in Thailand, used to give actual white elephants to people they wanted to punish. Oh yes, the elephants were valuable and respected, but that also meant they were expensive to take care of, so the kings hoped that the present would drive the recipient into financial ruin because the refusal of such a gift would have been an insult. The recipient was in fact struck with it. And our queen never travels alone. Along with her royal doctor, the queen travelled with 34 people, including a private secretary, a hairdresser, press officers, 8 bodyguards and more. Her Majesty also has with her, amongst other things, her own range of certified medicines and a supply of her own blood type. There's a long list of personal paraphernalia, including her preferred brand of toilet tissue, which is packed and sealed for her use only. Well, that's a right royal set of items to digest this week from my crazy weird world for interesting encyclopedia of facts from here at home and the wider world. Anyway, I'll just pop off now and sharpen me biro, ready to draw through some more for next week's offering. So I'll just say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit.
Thank you very much for those, Roger. Fascinating as always. Now we head over to Mina for this week's weather.
The weather for this week looks to be starting off wet, but will dry out as the week progresses. Temperatures will be steady throughout the week, hovering around 19 degrees. UV levels are expected to be moderate throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 4:45 a.m. for the sunrise and 9:36 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 18th of June, we have light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 18 degrees. On Saturday 19th of June, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 19 degrees. On Sunday 20th of June, we have light rain showers and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 18 degrees. On Monday 21st of June and Tuesday 22nd of June, we have light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 19 degrees. And on Wednesday 23rd and Thursday 24th of June, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 20 degrees. So that's your forecast for the week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Now we get to hear from Mina again, as she brings to us this week's Sounds of Nature.
The Cyril bunting is like a small yellow hamar with a thick seed-eater's bill.
The male has a bright yellow head with a black crown and a greenish breast band across its otherwise yellow underparts. The female is much more like the yellow hamar, but has a streaked grey-brown rump and chestnut shoulders. They nest on the ground within dense cover provided by thick hedgerows and scrub. They are sedentary in nature and will often travel only 250 metres from their nests to forage.
This recording was made by Lawrence Shove and was made available by the British Library.
Coming up next, we get the latest football news, brought to us by Ian.
Hello, I'm Ian, and here's your latest football news. Albion are still on the hunt for a new boss after their managerial hunt took yet another twist. The Baggies had been expected to announce David Wagner as their new head coach after holding advanced talks with the German. But instead, the 49-year-old opted to join BSC Young Boys in Switzerland. Wagner, though, was never the first choice of the club's board. It was previously revealed that the Baggies hierarchy actually wanted to appoint former Sheffield United manager Chris Wilder, but that move was vetoed by owner Guachuan Lai. Despite their move for Wagner collapsing, it is understood that Lai is continuing to veto any move for Wilder, who is believed to be keen on taking charge at the Hawthorns. But Lai doesn't like the way he publicly criticised Sheffield United owner during his time at Bramall Lane. Betting on Albion's next boss had been suspended after it was revealed Wagner was in advanced talks for the role. But the market is open again with Wilder the favourite, followed by former Preston North End boss Alex Neil, current Lincoln boss Michael Appleton, and the former Aberdeen boss Derek McInnes, who once captained the Baggies to the Premier League. Wolves hero John Richards is optimistic over the appointment of Bruno Lage and feels he should have time to stamp his mark. Lage officially succeeded Nuno Espirito Santo earlier this week, penning a 3-year deal at Molineux. And Richards, who scored 194 goals for Wolves, hopes the ex-Benfica chief can successfully build on the foundations put in place by Nuno. It was a surprise to see Nuno go, and after that you worry about how long it will take for whoever comes in to get to know the players and get their style of play across, he said. But you've got to be optimistic and hope this will be a case of building on what Nuno already laid down. He's Portuguese, and he will know the Portuguese players, so hopefully they can all settle in together. And the club have got Lage in early enough to, hopefully, bring in the players he wants. At the same time, he can release players he doesn't feel will fit into his style of play. He's got time to stamp his mark on the team, so that's a positive. Lage has stated his desire to continue and improve what Nuno did over his 4-year reign. He comes in having won the Portuguese top flight title at Benfica in 2018-2019. Sometimes change is a good thing for players. Nuno did really well, but sometimes players need a change of scenery as much as managers do, said Richards. So this could be a positive change in terms of style, direction and the atmosphere within the dressing room.
Thanks for that sports update, Ian. Now we get to hear from Heather, who has a feature on the Magna Carta.
Hello, this is Heather bringing you an article written by Jane Holmes about King John. It's timely to remember King John in the early summer, as he is best remembered as the monarch who signed the Magna Carta in June 1215. John was born in December 1166 at Beaumont Palace in Oxford. He was the youngest child of King Henry II and Eleanor, Duchess of Aquitaine. As the last of several sons in the family, this left very little land for John as the youngest. He was the last of the royal children to be born and had four elder brothers, William, Henry the Young, Richard, who later became Richard I, or Richard the Lionheart, and Geoffrey. He also had three sisters, the princesses Eleanor, Matilda, and Joan. Eventually, however, fate turned in John's direction and he became king in 1199. Richard I, known as Richard the Lionheart, preceded John as king because the other brothers had died earlier in battles. Opinions have varied about King John's personality and the way in which he ruled England. Some historians describe him as being jolly, kind, and a good ruler. However, others dispute those thoughts because John lost many battles and therefore many soldiers died, and land was lost, which made England a weaker, poorer place in which to live. For example, King John had many disputes with the church and with his barons. He lost the Duchy of Normandy to Philip II of France, giving the French Empire of Angevin more power throughout the 13th century. After this, King John had become an unpopular king. The barons rebelled, and it was left to Simon Langton, Archbishop of Canterbury, to regain peace. To do this, he drafted a Great Charter, or in Latin, Magna Carta, which was to be signed by the barons, the church, and the king. This charter was a document that would give the barons protection from illegal imprisonment and access to justice. The church's rights would also be protected, and limitations on feudal payments to the crown would be implemented by a council of 25 barons. The charter was put before King John, who reluctantly signed it at Runnymede, near Windsor, on the 15th of June, 1215. The following year, King John died in October 1216, and his son became Henry III. John's body was buried in Worcester Cathedral, in front of the altar of St. Wulfstan, and the tomb can still be seen there today. His tomb features the Plantagenet badge of three lions, although these are strictly leopards, and has the oldest effigy in England. After John's death, his son, Henry III, became an important benefactor of Worcester Cathedral.
Thanks for that, Heather. Interesting stuff. Now we get to hear from Craig as he tells us some jokes from his Black Country joke book.
Hello, I'm Craig and I'm going to tell you some jokes from my Black Country joke book. What do they call Toys R Us in Dudley? Toys and We. Here's another one for you. Which ex-football commentator has the biggest hands? You, Johns. And finally, I found the local gym and asked if they could teach me the splits. He said, well, how flexible are you? I said, I can't make it Tuesdays or Thursdays. I'm Craig, and that was my Black Country joke book.
Thanks for those rib ticklers, Craig. Now we head over to Mina, who has for us the answers to this week's quiz.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. How do they keep track of the Queen's outfits? The answer, they use a spreadsheet. Question 2. What names were given to man engagement rings? And the answer here is the stag, the pilot, and the master. Question 3. Why are wedding rings worn on the fourth finger? And the answer here is, it's thought to connect with the heart. Question 4. How much water does our body lose during a flight? And the answer here is 8%. Question 5. What gift did the kings of Siam give as a punishment? And the answer, a white elephant. And finally, question 6. How many accompanied the Queen on her travels? And the answer here is 35, including her doctor. How did you do? Great, I hope. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, did you get the answer to the guess the sound question that Rob asked at the start of the show? Here's one more chance to hear it before I tell you the answer. The sound you just heard was a recording of toast popping up from a toaster. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News,
we head over to Graham Fisher for another edition of In My Opinion.
Hello. The following is merely an idea. I claim little intellectual rigour in its derivation, but offer it as a catalyst for debate in the enduring quest to reconcile high art and pure science, a theme that has exercised me since the halcyon days of my youth. But it is my more recent induction into the world of glass that has revitalised my re-examining the connection from a sideways perspective, namely the skills involved in glassmaking, for which, of course, Stourbridge is famous. However, quod erat demonstrandum, this same principle may equally apply to other skills requiring a combination of cognitive and psychomotor abilities for which the Black Country is long renowned. A bold aim. But we cannot soar with the eagles on the wings of a wren. Allow me to get airborne. First, the key player. It was Bertrand Russell who suggested that numbers hold sway above the flux of life. Thus was it ever so, and our hero of the moment is the Italian mathematician Fibonacci, born around 1170 and dying around 1250, who, like Russell, was one of the finest minds of his day. His book, Liber Abaci, examined a system of Hindu-Arabic numbering that featured the astounding arrangement that came to be known by his name. It's said that he initially used the sequence to estimate the fastest rate at which rabbits could copulate, but it proved to have far wider corollaries. Here it is. Fibonacci numbers comprise a progression beginning with 0, then 1, and followed by the addition of each succeeding number to its predecessor, i.e. 0, 1, 1, which is 0 plus 1, 2, which is 1 plus 1, 3, which is 2 plus 1, 5, which is 3 plus 2, 8, 5 plus 3, 13, 8 plus 5, and so on ad infinitum. Now, remove the sums for clarity, and the sequence actually reads 0, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, 34, 55, 89, etc., etc. Et voilà, here's the magic. In nature, the number of petals on many flowers is a Fibonacci number. There are numerous other instances of correlation to the extent that mathematician and philosopher Adolf Zeising, 1810 to 1876, proposed it as a universal law of nature. But this is merely the beginning. If the larger number is divided by the one preceding it, ignoring the first few until everything settles, the ratio steadies out at around 1.62. This has become known as the golden ratio, golden mean, or divine proportion, and even has its own mathematical symbol, the Greek letter phi. The ratio has been shown to be psychologically pleasing, in that it's a natural ratio that the eye coordinates to the brain. Thus, no surprise that its dimensions were deployed extensively throughout the Renaissance, and to this day, artists and photographers still use a Fibonacci ratio as the most popular shape of canvas or image. Yet it would be interesting to hear how many would be willing to quantify why, other than it just looks right. Now, let us hold this in abeyance as I turn to the 2012 Portland Vase Project, a magnificent initiative headed up by lifelong glassman Ian Jury to recreate this iconic piece of Roman cameo glass in Stourbridge. I was the official biographer for the venture and shadowed it throughout. Mere words are almost inadequate in capturing the sheer brilliance of master glassmaker Richard Golding as he started it all off by blowing the blanks. But I gave it my best shot when I wrote, I was transfixed, as with an efficiency of movement and a deftness of touch that redefined sublime, he slowly, resolutely enticed that amorphous gobbet of semi-liquid into a masterpiece of exquisiteness that would fain serve the gods themselves. This, dear reader, transcends mere talent. We were witnessing a gift that was nudging at the echelons of pure genius. Fast forward to May 2014, when I delivered a presentation on Stourbridge Glass in, of all places, Stourbridge. Following my talk, I was presented with a stunning glass bowl made by glass artiste Alistair Malcolm. It sits in pride of place at home, next to a couple of tumblers that he presented to me on a previous occasion. I was looking at them one morning when I wondered if the patterns on Alistair's bowl could be a Fibonacci number. Intrigued, I annotated every dot and marking. And my findings? Absolutely nothing. No correlation whatsoever. I placed the bowl back next to the glasses and rued my fool's errand. Until, that is, I took another look at the glasses. The image of Sherlock Holmes admonishing his chronicler, "You see, Watson, but you do not observe," punctuated my thoughts as I made closer inspection of something I'd looked at 1,000 times but failed to observe. The walls in the bases resembled nautilus shells. Not exact, I confess, but near enough to rekindle my excitement as I scrabbled to find the telephone to ring Alistair. The burning question on my mind, was this something he had done deliberately and knowingly, or did it simply just look right? As the tone brrrred, I bit myself a tenner that Alistair would humour me courteously as some sort of crank. I lost. It transpired that Alistair had learnt about Fibonacci and the golden mean in his undergraduate days. It was not something he particularly explored, but he had found it a useful bookmark when ideas didn't quite look right by dint of being outside of what he felt was pleasing proportions. So, the acid question, was the shape in the base of his glasses deliberate or unplanned? I never gave it a thought, he told me. It's just how I made them. But, now you come to mention it. I allude once more to Holmes when he remarks to Watson, "Art in the blood is liable to take the strangest forms." The quote is particularly prescient here, since art surely takes no stranger form than the ability to manipulate a blob of molten silica into a thing of exquisite beauty. But, in what amounts to a slant on the classic nature-nurture conundrum, how much of this is a gift nudging at the echelons of pure genius, or to what extent are such talents the consequence of a pragmatic rationale that is yet to be quantified? And this is the quintessence of my ruminations. If such talent is pragmatically quantifiable, then it can be expressed as a strand of logic represented by mathematical function. That being the case, it can be learnt. Ergo, if it can be learnt, it can be taught. Thus, by extraction, its teaching is not constrained by geography or timescale. The implications of communicating across divides by means of prescription and to store in retrieval systems for future generations that which we presently consider to be almost divine are awesome. Yet the broader principle is a valid one that's already employed routinely in the teaching of cognitive skills. Consider, for example, driving a motor car. The coordination in learning to control a car, ask any 17-year-old, is a formidable undertaking. The task is made the more palatable by breaking down the action of, say, changing gear into a series of steps whereby each step is represented by a succession of the simplest elements to which the task can be reduced. Master each element in sequence, then put them all together for the completed action. Hey presto, a crossover between cognitive and psychomotive behaviour, the condensing of basic motion elements into a series of thirblings, thus named by Frank Bunker Gilbreth, 1868-1924, a time and motion specialist who branded his brainchild by spelling his surname backwards. Broadly analogous to thirblings in terms of function, algorithms were propounded in ancient times by Euclid of Alexandria, but have been elevated in our consciousness more recently with the massive expansion in computer technology. Quite simply, an algorithm is a step-by-step procedure for data processing and the somewhat sinister-sounding automated reasoning that proceeds through a number of defined steps until its objective is attained. We are routinely subjected to algorithms, accessing a bank account, online purchasing, social media, all are based on increasingly powerful algorithms that were the stuff of wild imaginings just a few years ago. Moore's Law, named after Gordon E. Moore, who founded the Intel, that's Integrated Electronics Corporation, postulates that computing power increases exponentially by doubling approximately every 2 years. It is thus a plausible sequitur to postulate that it is merely a matter of time before psychomotor skills may similarly be represented by a formula as a function of automated reasoning. Now, I contend it's not a question of if, but when, and that the period it may take should be considered an incentive more than a deterrent. The Higgs boson particle, identified courtesy of the CERN Large Hadron Collider, was but a fantastical notion in the mind of David Higgs for over 40 years. Similarly, not quite there yet, but getting ever closer, is the unifying theory of everything that has exercised the likes of Stephen Hawking for generations. Watch this space. By these yardsticks, the formulation of an encryption founded on the principle of Fibonacci that may be primal to glassmaking and other cognitive psychomotor abilities would appear to be relatively small beer. Its discovery may ultimately be by someone who has Isaac Newton's providence to see further than others by standing on the shoulders of giants and simply popping the final piece into the jigsaw. Intriguing possibilities indeed. But, lying across the path of an insatiable quest for pure logic, I spy a Pandora's box that holds weighty issues of morality and ethics. Do we embrace such developments with the optimistic anticipation of Huxley's Brave New World, or do we rebuff them in trepidation as a nightmarishly Orwellian analogy of 1984? Ah, I see the cue to take my bell, for it will require far finer minds than mine to navigate through that one. In the meantime, casting science aside, I should continue to frequent the Stourbridge Glass Quarter and marvel at these virtuosos, for surely that is what they are, plying their mesmerizing art in time-honored fashion. Do join me there. I guarantee you'll be impressed.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!